Hello, everybody. This is Stu Smith along with Mario Romero. Now, this is a little bit different than what you've seen. This is going to be my first of a series of what I'd like to do is get a bunch of guys that have done really cool things, whether it's special ops or firefighters or policemen and SWAT team guys, FBI, whatever. You know, I want to get their stories. And I'm going to call this new series Two Through and After. So we're going to find out a little bit more about Mario here and what he did prior to becoming a SEAL and a little bit about his SEAL life, and then we'll go into what he's doing now. So let's, without further ado, Mario, who are you?
Awesome. Well, thanks again for inviting me on. This is I'm pretty stoked. This is actually like my first legit interview, anything like this. So
okay, cool. Well, thank you.
I apologize if I come across amateur.
Hey, I am amateur. I am amateur. I've done 40 podcasts, though. I will say that. You're number 41.
That's so awesome. Good.
So we're moving.
Yeah, so much like a lot of other young men early in our childhood, I was attracted to the lore of the whole super secret frogman. You know, in fact, I would say it probably started with Predator in the 80s. I just loved that movie. I loved you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura's characters. And I wanted to do that. In fact, I asked my brother, what is it that those guys did? And he said, oh, I think they might be SEALs. And so I asked, what is it that SEALs do? And he said, something like, I think they just blow stuff up on the beach. I said, that sounds awful. I think I'm just going to go be a Marine. And then, you know, as I got older, middle school and high school, I learned more about SEALs. And I was like, wait, no, I think SEALs is definitely what I want to do.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think my first one was, I can't remember what it was actually, but I just remember using the word frogman when I was like 8 years old. And I had my new, you know, my full face mask on and my little slip-on flippers that I was swimming in the pool back and forth that I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a frogman. I didn't even know what a frogman was. I didn't even know what Navy SEALs were, but I think there was like a comic book series in the 70s that had, maybe even before the 70s, that had frogmen on there, Frogman Adventures. And there used to be a TV show called, and it was old UDT guys. Damn it. I got all the DVDs somewhere. I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, those are some of my first introductions to SEALs, and you know they're fun. You know, I think we all have at some point something motivated us in this direction, and but you know that motivation has to start turning into persistence and training and preparation and discipline. And so, what did you do to like move that ball forward from first wanting to do it and then getting it done?
I think first I should preface that being or watching Predator was only a driver to solidify what it is that I wanted to do. But when I was younger, as I've written about this before, when I was younger, I had a lot of books on World War II specifically. I've always been kind of a history kid. You know, it was my original major before going to Buds. And all my books were generally the Bolsheviks regarding, Stalin, the time, Hitler, all these books. And I remember, though I don't remember any of the actual text or literature in the books, I do remember the photos. And I remember looking at the people in concentration camps. And I was so bothered since I was a little kid, I was just insanely bothered that, you know, humanity would allow this to happen, that humans can do this to other humans, that we were capable of this kind of atrocity. And growing up, I always also told myself, you know, if I'm of able body and able mind, if I'm capable of volunteering myself in a way that helps prevent anything like this from ever happening again, I'm gonna do it, because that was just affected me so much when I was a kid. Now, you know, having watched Predator was kind of like, okay, yeah, that's what I wanted to do. That's the part of it. But as I got older, you know, I got in a little bit of trouble when I was in middle school. I was kind of a bad kid. I got arrested. You know, I failed school, and you know, I was kind of going down a wrong path until one day I just snapped out of it, and I found a pair of my brother's running shoes, and I tossed them on, and I just went for a run, and I couldn't make it more than one time around my block, and I had the stitches. I was like, this is going to be a long road, you know. fortunately, I stuck to it. And then the same goes for swimming. I knew I had to maintain. I knew I had to continue training. When it came to swimming, is an even funnier story because I'd never had any formal lessons. I never had any training. I didn't have the lungs for it. But when I got to high school, I knew I needed to get comfortable in the water. So I joined the swim team, and I wore board shorts to the pool. I didn't have goggles. As soon as I jumped off the block, I had my head above the water. I was barely staying alive. I wasn't even, it was just, must have been just the funniest, like, show for everybody that was watching. So it was maybe two strokes in, and I was hanging off the sidewall. And the coach was at this time assessing our abilities. And I just remember him, like, looking at me with wide eyes and, like, just left my lane. I was in a lane all to myself, and he had assigned his younger sister to help me learn how to swim. And oh, one of the funniest things was a lot of the guys on the swim team actually, they told me this years later that they had a bet amongst themselves on to see how long it took before I quit. Cause it was an arduous sport. We were like, in my years, we switched from 1, 2, and 3 in the state of New Jersey, the group 4. So we were one of the best teams in the state, and I was just like the worst in the best team. But I just kept on going. You know, I kept on going. They didn't know how bad it is that I wanted it. I needed to learn how to swim. I read everything and watched every documentary on buds and SEAL training because I wanted to nail it down. But that must have been a quite the embarrassing display my first time. But I'll tell you what, like 3 months later, I was swimming at like up in Long Island. I was winning my heats in butterfly stroke, which I also elected to swim because it was the hardest thing. Because
nice.
Every time I read about SEALs, it was like, hey, go after the hard thing. Be you know, test yourself. It's always you always want to learn and find out about yourself. So
that's really good. That's because a lot of swimmers don't even want to do the breaststroke. So they're like, oh yeah, you want to do breaststroke? Take it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's a hard one. Man. Yeah, but I don't know how to do it.
That was a butterflyer. So the butterflyer is like,
oh yeah, butterfly. I mean, sorry.
Yeah, it's a hard one. It's the hardest one, and it'll gas you out the fastest for sure.
Good call. Yeah. I tell you what, there's a lot of commonalities with, you know, pre-SEAL life, and a lot of them have to do with sports. You know, I think you can learn a lot from sports. Now, you don't have to be a world-class athlete by any means, but, you know, having some physical challenge in front of you that you have to beat, a weakness that you turn into a strength, learning how to be a team player, you know, all of those are great things that you get, the intangibles out of doing sports. Now, like I said, you can be a team player and not do sports too. I mean, some of the best team players I've ever seen were musicians,
yeah.
You know, that are in a band, you know, they're phenomenal. You know, I mean, you can't make a song without teamwork, you know, if you have 20 different instruments, you know, yeah. So, but no, that's a really good story. Did you play any other sports besides swimming?
I was a cross country runner. I kept up with that also. I was a cross country runner. I ran track. I played lacrosse. I was a varsity athlete all 3 seasons during school. And then outside of school, I just kept it, maintained it. I realized real young that the habits that I was building in sports, especially swimming, where we would get up at about 5 a.m., even on Saturdays to go to the pool, that this was instituting a set of pretty much discipline in my life that I wanted to hang on to. You know, I think it's so easy for students, unfortunately, in school who even do participate in sports. Once they get out of school or summer is over, they give up that or begin to lose that discipline. And I saw it really early on that I wanted to keep it. So although it wasn't swimming season, I was still getting up super early and going and filling that time in with more physical activity. I was this like punk rock straight edge kid too. So I used to draw the black X's on my hand. I didn't participate in any alcohol or drugs. I did none of that in high school. I was very sharply focused. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And you know, I had to cut out every single potential distraction in order to get there. And
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Focus and discipline. Yeah. That's definitely a good combination for success. And, you know, obviously you have. Now, obviously, you know, the physical side, it sounds like you had that covered. You know, by the time you went to the Navy and said, hey, I want to enlist and be a Navy SEAL, there was a medical challenge as well. You know, you have to pass a medical fitness or medical, I guess, what do you call it? A medical physical, you know, to get into. And they check everything from, you know, any previous breaks that you had, and you got to have all the surgical notes if you've had surgery and, you know, rehab stuff. Any ailments that you might have, asthma is a killer, you know, any heart arrhythmia is a killer. But this is where I really wanted to make you my first interview, because I have never heard of a getting to story quite like yours. So if you would share that with the group, it's incredible. So
yeah, so I had several medical conditions that could have negated any possible entry into the Navy. Two of the big ones were eyesight, which was just absolutely terrible. It was a 2400 eyesight.
Damn.
I couldn't see street signs, basically. I just looked at the colors and knew what I was looking at. And it was my heart arrhythmia. I had several issues wrong with my heart. That was the big one. That was real scary for me. Because it included irregular heartbeats, it included murmurs, it included tiny holes in the microfibers of the heart. Just a lot of things wrong with my heart. And these were all things that I knew would prevent me. So one of the things that I did was I went to the public library at my hometown, but this was before the internet was what it is today. And I looked it up, and I started just pretty much researching it and seeing how I can beat it. How it is that these arrhythmia and these conditions are detected. So I started just drawing out, you know, ways that I can, you know, beat it. For the heart arrhythmia, for example, I knew that if you have an extremely high heart rate, there's a real difficult time in identifying anything wrong with your heart. So when it came time for that appointment to check my heart, as I was sitting outside the doctor's office, I was doing dips on the chairs, on the handles of the chairs, just raising my heart rate up. And I was also doing it holding my breath because I thought it would help. Then I had to go and lay on the little doctor's mat to go get the EKG, all the equipment set up. And as he's setting this up, I'm doing like micro leg lifts. I keep my heels off the table and I'm holding my breath. And I'm doing all of this so that he doesn't detect it. So the test goes through fine. He's concerned about the high heart rate. He's like, yeah, your heart rate is real high, but you know, that's not a super disqualifying thing, you know, whatever, you're young, you're probably just excited or whatever. But it worked. It worked, and they didn't find anything. And I managed to get through that just fine. The issue with the eyesight was a little bit different. That one involved a little bit of luck. Fortunately for me, I had taken my training very seriously, and I ran and swam competitively for years prior to BUDS. That when I entered before going into boot camp, I got a SEAL challenge contract. And once I got into boot camp, I lost the contract because of my eyesight. So I was pretty devastated there. They let me go ahead and try out for it again. You know, there's a portion in boot camp where they'll ask you, you know, raise your hand if you would like to sign up or try out with the physical for any of the special operations or special activities or jobs in the military, in the Navy. So I agreed and I did it, but they said my eyesight was still bad. So I took the test again and I crushed it. And they said my eyesight was still too bad. So fortunately, I had a really good set of recruit division commanders. These are like the drill instructors for the Navy. And they saw what I was about. They when we had the physical fitness assessment for boot camp, the very first one, I beat everybody in boot camp. I think I almost came within seconds of breaking the all-time boot camp record with like a 727 or 730 mile and a half.
Damn.
I was a pretty fast runner. And you know, like 155 push-ups and 135 sit-ups with 2 minutes break in between. So they saw that I was serious. And I also got in sort of trouble because in boot camp, you're not allowed to be outside of your bed, you know, only a certain amount of people at night. However, when they would come in, they would see me on the ground doing push-ups and doing sit-ups because I didn't find that the workouts in boot camp were enough to sustain, you know, the strength that I had built prior. So they did see that, and they were gracious enough to make me the athletic PO in charge of all the, you know, getting everybody in shape. And then they also made me the laundry PO, which was pretty funny because in our new buildings, we had laundry poles,
pull-up bars.
Yep. Which you hang the bags, and they would allow me to go in there, and they knew that I could use that for dips, for pull-up bars, for my own little workout. They wouldn't even bother to to smoke me because they knew like my numbers were just too high. And they called me to the office one day and said, "Hey, look, your numbers are real high. You know, your aptitude, everything, it seems like pretty squared away. Why don't you try out for this program?" And I told them the story. The only reason I joined the Navy was to go to Buds. And the one chief said, "Well, yeah, there's no way I'm not going to let you do this. Like I've seen your work." So the real shady part was one evening that chief took me out of the compartment, the boot camp, you know, big room, and took me across the street. You know, it seemed real shady, and he had some doctor waiting in a dimly lit room, and they pretty much forged a signature for me and said that my eyesight was good enough for Bud. So they did this for me, and I still talk to this chief occasionally.
Wow.
I often mentor his son who's trying to go to Buds also. But I wouldn't have gotten away with it if it wasn't for him. So he signed off on it. Then when I did show up to Buds after A school, I just wore contacts throughout all of Buds, SQT. It wasn't until I got to my team. It wasn't in fact until right before sniper school, 2 weeks before, that I got surgery, which was awesome because then I could see the trace on my rounds. I could
nice.
See windage. I didn't necessarily need a shooting buddy, but though I did have one, it was real cool. But those were the two major medical issues that were really like hindering or potential obstacles in my way. But I wasn't going to give up. I was going to keep going.
That's great. I love to hear stories where you just don't take no for an answer. But you know, you earned it too. You set yourself up in a position to stand out amongst the crowd. You had your foot in the door, and you're right. I mean, you did get lucky and somebody helped you, but you kind of make your own luck. You know, is what I'm saying. And everything that I hear, you absolutely earned that. Now, the one thing I have, because your whole heart arrhythmia, was that a theory that you created yourself on this? That,
oh, you know, I just,
how did you do that?
The whole, what do you mean? I knew, since I was a young kid that I had issues with my heart. I remember like growing up and my mom telling me, my brother telling me, going to the hospital or the doctor repeatedly for issues of my heart. So, yeah. I just didn't want to take chances, you know. Yeah. I asked, what is it that's wrong with my heart? I still to this day, I don't know that it's entirely like a disqualifying thing anymore.
Yeah.
I just was not going to chance it. You know, I saw it was one of those things in the back of my mind that was kind of there, and I wanted to eliminate that as a problem.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like an electrical issue. Sometimes, you know, it's just one of those little things, but you obviously have proven your heart's ability through, you know, competitive running and swimming.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and you, sure. you didn't die.
You know, so. I was still worried about it. So I was just not gonna, you know, it was always there. I had to ease myself from that kind of worry.
Well, that's incredible. I love that two story. So now you're at Buds, you're getting through Buds. Did you find that your endurance background was helpful? And two, where did you think your weakness was when you were going through Buds? Because we all have them.
I we definitely have. Buds has a way of exploiting everybody's weakness.
Absolutely.
My endurance was a huge key part in my success in Buds. I found that, especially for the 4 mile timed runs and even some of the swims, definitely the O course, these were events, the way I thought of them, were where I could relax. I could move at a pace that was still faster than almost the entire class. But since I had been, high school and college cross country runner, and I was I always ran 5Ks, 8Ks, 10Ks that I signed up for. I found these to be a nice little escape from the gaze of the instructors.
Yes.
So I did whatever it took to like pretty much be first, because that's just what you do in Buds.
Absolutely.
But also not to exhaust yourself, not to exhaust myself. So I found that running. Now the issue was, because I was a long time runner, I had very limited body fat. So even to go to MEPS, even when I went to MEPS my first year, I was 117 pounds, and they told me I had to, put on 10 pounds more even to join the Navy. So I couldn't join for a year or two later. So when I finally showed up to Buds, I was only 135 pounds. And at like 5'8", that just made the cold brutal on me. And I was a victim of hypothermia several times, but just like the advice I've given to some guys, I tended to focus on my strengths, instead of worrying so much about my weaknesses. Yes, I do try to fix those weaknesses, but something like cold, I don't know how you can prepare for that. So when it came to that, I just, I was like, all right, we have a run today. That's going to be a very chill run for me. We have a swim also. That's going to be chill. The O course. Oh, come on. O course is like my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that cold was a little brutal.
Okay. That's interesting. I was just the opposite. Actually, the runs for me were brutal. Right. I was 195, 200 pounds going through Buds. And, so the runs were painful. I was okay. I never failed one, but it was just, they were always gut checks for me. To not be gooned required a gut check. Right. Yeah. So that kind of sucked, cause you run all the damn time, yes. But I will say this, I the logs and the boats, though they were horrible, they weren't the things that, I thought running was worse, put it that way.
Wow. Right.
Putting on a big pair of fins, I could go all day. I had big power lifting legs, so putting on a big pair of fins, I was fine. O course, I was pretty good at. I don't know how, I was just got pretty good at running that O course pretty well. But I tell you, the cold, yeah, it was cold, but I was never horribly cold. Like we had a buddy of mine that was about your size, and you could just hear his teeth chattering all the time. I mean, he was always cold, and he probably had like 4% body fat or something on him. And he was just, I don't know how he did it. So I understand the cold can get to you.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like you said earlier, Buds has a way of exposing your weaknesses. No matter what you are, whether you're a strong powerlifting guy or you come from an endurance background, you really have to learn. If you're going to get through Budge, you got to get good at everything. And the things that you're great at, pull back a notch so you're not killing yourself trying to be, like for your mile and a half time, you could probably run 5 minute miles, but you probably didn't want to do a 20 minute 4 mile timed run every week.
Yeah.
You could probably coast in at like 25, 30, 26 and still beat 95% of the class,
exactly.
with a 26, So yeah. Anyway. Any fun stories? We all have Hell Week stories. We have, moments that you knew things were working. I love the story about, I've been training so hard, and then all of a sudden we did this one thing and I was like, hey, it's starting to sink in and I'm becoming a SEAL. When did you see that evolution that you were going to make it?
Yeah. So that came for me Monday night of Hell Week. That's way early. I know it's early, but I was, like I said, I was always really, really, most afraid of the cold. So having read, Dick Couch's Warrior Elite, having read everything I could, and watched everything I could from as early as I could to try to limit the potential surprises that I would experience in Buds.
Yeah.
I feared that steel pier. That was the one thing that I feared. And in all the books and everything, the steel pier said, they said the steel pier was Tuesday night. And so it was Monday night late, early Tuesday morning. And, you know, before I knew it, we were at the steel pier, and we were there like 12 or 24 hours earlier than I thought we were going to be. So once I realized, wait, this is, I did get hypothermia at that point, but I was in and out. But as soon as it was over, I was like, wow, like steel pier is over. I can't believe it. It's Tuesday. I'm done. Wednesday was my birthday in Hell Week, actually. So my gift to myself was, hey, crush it through until Wednesday, you know, make it through the steel pier Tuesday night, and Wednesday's your birthday. But in fact, the steel pier was like a whole 24 hours earlier. But I knew it, and I was just so excited at that point. I was like, I'm so stoked. And then it was like, and then after that, some of the more, you know, fun stories were the hallucinations during Hell Week. You know, I had some really funny ones. I had I would look down at the sand on the beach, and I would see a deer with two straight antlers and then a clown face. And then I would like be kind of weirded out. So I would kick them both. And instead of them disappearing, it's like two more deer and two more, they would just multiply. And it just wouldn't stop. So these things were hilarious. I read once that, you know, people see buildings out during the around the world and mm-hmm. fences, and no joke, that is exactly what happened to me. I remember telling my guys like, hey, we have to paddle slightly to the right or else we're going to hit this fence out in the middle of the ocean. The funniest thing is no one disagreed, you know, everyone was like, yeah, okay, whatever, let's just go. But
I like that. You know, my moment where I was like, okay, I think I'm going to make this and things are working out right was in Hell Week 2. And it was like day 3 or 4. I can't remember whenever we did the round the world, and we won the round the world race. Right. And we came in probably 2 hours before the last boat. I mean, we were just crushing it. We were all healthy. Everybody felt pretty good. We were bigger guys, you know, boat crew 2. You know, most of the guys in boat crew 2 were like 6 feet and 190 to 200 pounds. So we're actually a pretty strong boat crew. So we crushed this one. And I remember getting, you know, we're just sitting there and they're like, well, it pays to be a winner. So they let us lay down and we were all spooned together, you know, on the beach. And then they laid the boat on top of us. And I remember that feeling of like, I'm warm. My body heat is getting trapped in this boat. Yeah. I'm laying on a bed of sand next to a bunch of dudes, but I am more comfortable now than I think I've ever been in my entire life. Mm-hmm. But that's what I realized. I kind of reverted back to that like caveman mentality of like, you know, I am surviving this. Yeah. And you know, I was like, I can do this. You know, so that was my little moment there. Yeah, so after Buds, what team did you go to?
I went to, so we get to, obviously we get to choose which coast, and I had already fallen in love with San Diego. So I picked West Coast, and I got to team one. I got orders to team one. And one of the funny things is when I checked into team one, or initially attempted to check in, they had just left for deployment about a week and a half, 2 weeks prior. Wow. So the shore duty chief that was there, who stays back and maintains the team and any administrative work from stateside, she told us not to bother checking in. Don't bother checking in. Take a month, take 2 months off if we want, because, and she won't charge us for this leave, you know, it's fine. Well, we didn't know it was that she was going to go get some surgery done and she actually wasn't going to be there either. But as we all approach the front door and she tells us this, everybody, like the way I think about it, everybody turned around and started walking back. And I did a little loop and I went in and checked in anyway. I said, no, cause I would like to get sent over as a new guy. I don't care what it takes. Just send me over and I'll go do the cleanup jobs or whatever it takes. So I check in, and though they didn't send me over, there were a lot of slots open for various different schools. So I really lucked out as a new guy, and checking in early, not heeding the advice, because I got to go to, you know, sniper school. I was a comms guy. I was a JTAC. I got all the range safety officer, the dive supervisory schools. I knocked all these out before the platoon even came back. So,
wow.
So yeah, when they came back, because I had like, you know, I just was so eager to be at the team already. And then, as a new guy, I had all these I had all these roles, which was awesome because then they couldn't operate without me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take advantage. You know, you guys that are like checking in, take advantage of that time, you know, before you join a platoon, because I mean, you can really find some good schools. I remember just trying to sign up for everything. I think I got MARSOC school or MARops, the MARops course. That was really good. And I was an officer, so couldn't go to sniper school, but you know, you had some really good options there, you know, that you could do. I mean, I remember just going into the training officer every day and just say, what do you have? What do you have? Yep. You know, and I said, ooh, forklift driving school. I'll do that. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I just want to go do something. And like, you can't do forklift school. So, but anyway, it was, yeah, you go in there and do as many as you can.
Yeah, so. you can be annoying. You know, that's fine. Be annoying. I'd rather be known as being annoying than a guy who never wants to show up to or doesn't want any kind of responsibility or any work. You make yourself known like that in the offices, and you know, when a school does open up and you're around, they're like, well, we'll send this guy. He's always looking to go to schools, and it's never a bad idea.
Yep, absolutely. So what even I think is even more impressive of your story is what you are doing now that you are no longer in the SEAL teams. You're no longer active duty in the SEAL teams. Tell a bit about what you're doing now and what your future goals are here in the, say, next 5-10 years.
Yeah, so right now I'm finishing up a degree in pure mathematics here at Columbia University. I've got about 5 classes left until this degree is done. I got in contact with Tim Capra, who sits on the board of candidate selection for the astronaut program. And he informed me that there's not going to be another astronaut class selected for another 4 years. So that gives me plenty of time to finish out this degree and then pursue a master's in aeronautics, astronautics, some kind of aerospace engineering. But I do study a lot of astronomy also, and the astrophysics route. And it's just, these are interests that also from the 80s, you know, from the 80s, I watched the movie Flight of the Navigator, the kid with the spaceship. And I remember in that movie trying to understand time dilation, how he travels near his speed of light and he comes back and his family had aged. And these things always stick with me. So had always stuck with me. So I was always curious about astronomy and space. I love space. I love the study of space. I feel like when I'm forced to think in scopes and scales of the size of the universe and the vastness of time, it gives me a little bit better understanding of our cosmic circumstance, and suddenly things don't seem, you know, so bad. Your perspective changes. It just gets better. I think, you know, humanity, though I am always willing to fight, you know, the enemy, I think, like Carl Sagan said, a dispassionate extraterrestrial observer that sees us would think more, we were more similar than we are different, all of us. Right. So I think our similarities are cause for celebration more so than our differences are cause for war. But that doesn't mean that I still won't go take the fight to ISIS. That doesn't mean that I'd be this, you know, like,
right. I understand. That's a good yin and yang. Yeah. That's a really good balance, you know, for your body and brain, you know, to be able to, you know, understand the universe at that level, as well as understand our own geopolitical differences as well, you know, throughout the world, which I admire you for. I have to say, my wife discovered you in our family, right? She saw you on Instagram, and I'll put all his contact info in the description below, by the way, if you guys that are listening. I think she found your Astronomic Wonders,
yes, sir,
page, and then you also have a Mario Romero Instagram page where you do a lot of FaceTime live or Instagram Live type things where you can, people ask you questions about your bud's life and pre-buds and how to train for that. So, which is awesome. It's great to be a mentor to young kids, which I, honor you for that. But yeah, tell me about your Astronomic Wonders, because I am also in the same realm of excitement when it comes to looking at the stars and understanding just how far things are and what that means with time and distance. And
it's phenomenal. For me, it becomes a very spiritual journey, a very spiritual endeavor, I guess. Just the study of astronomy and space. I love the feeling I get from looking out into the universe, into the cosmos at night, and realizing that I am just a part of. And now this is where people have different ideas on ideology and whatnot, which is everything is fine. Everybody has their own way of understanding and their whole own way of coping. But for me, knowing that I'm a part of the universe, knowing that I am the molecules pieced together by the universe in an attempt to understand itself. This just brings me so much joy to know that we are the universe. It is us, the very molecules found in the universe. As Neil deGrasse Tyson says, if you rank them in order, the human body is the same exact ranking, the same exact order. So we were. The way we were we are formed is not at all different. We are the universe trying to understand itself, and it's
really cool. I never thought of it that way. That we are definitely of the same origin, as the stars out there. So we are star people, and we're trying to understand itself. That is a neat way of looking at it.
And we're just looking back at itself. So it's us looking into a mirror, looking back at ourselves, in the cosmos. And it's really just an awesome thing. And there's so much curiosity there. I fortunately, I was able to maintain the childhood curiosity that I did for space, for science, for all of science, for just philosophy, for everything. I have a, we could sit here and talk about the history of, the Crayola crayon, and I would just be as enthralled with that because there's just something about wanting to know everything. And it's unfortunate that we only live so long because I want to know it all.
Yeah, that's really neat. So tell me this, when I look at your Astronomic Wonders Instagram page, I see pictures sometimes of just an arm of the Milky Way going across the sky. How do you see that? Because I've never seen it before. Can I do it with filters on my iPhone? Is that something I could do, or does it require better photographic equipment?
Well, changing settings on a camera to enhance your aperture, your ISO, your f-stop, all these adjustments on your camera will allow you, for long exposure to see these things. But if you really want to see it, a straight naked eye, and it is possible, you just have to move away from cities that have so much light pollution, because that great rift, the great dark rift in the Milky Way is up there. It's there, 24 hours a day. Yeah, it's up there. Just unfortunately, like here in New York City, I'm never going to be able to see it due to the light pollution or even the surrounding cities. New York is so bright that it kind of stops everyone from seeing it. So, in fact, if you look at scientists like Carl Sagan, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Michio Kaku, all these very famous astrophysicists and astronomers that are around, that have been around recently, most of them are from New York, and most of them were captivated because they thought it was a lie. Having left the city when they were younger and seen the actual night sky, they said, well, no, this isn't the real sky. There's more than three stars in the sky, so I would definitely encourage, camping trips out into the middle of, state parks that will allow it, that have limited light pollution, because it'll change you. It'll change me. It has changed me. So
yeah, that's my bucket list. Now, I heard you did a trip down to South Carolina to see the full totality of this recent celestial wonder that we just experienced?
Yeah, I went to Idaho.
Idaho. Okay, all right. So you got it out west. Got it.
Yeah. I flew to a friend's house in Idaho, and we had our worst case scenario set up, which was the most likely course of action that we were going to do is just, he lived in Boise, and the totality was happening about 50 miles north of Boise. So we had sleeping bags and a tent. We were just going to go find a spot, most likely that we weren't allowed to stay in, but we were just going to set up shop anyway. At the last minute, one of his friends who owns a whole property, an expansive ranch out there with multiple cabins, was like, hey, you know, you guys are more than welcome to just stay at my cabin, which was just an awesome cabin right in the path of totality. And then he also went, and there's an amphitheater built because a lot of churches uses that as a retreat. Well, there's a really nice amphitheater, and he ended up cutting a trail through the woods for us because he knew that's what we were wanting to do. So naturally we were there for a few days, and we made friends with the other cabins that were around. And of course, since I'm there, I'm writing workouts, and I'm making everybody, even the strangers from the other cabin, come participate in these circuit workouts, which they loved. You know, as the eclipse was going on, we were finishing like a plyometrics leg workout that we were doing. And then everybody finally, you know, ran as much as they could, cause we had kind of put a hurting on their legs to grab their glasses and whatnot.
Right.
But, it turned into this best case scenario. And then we like made friends with all these people. We watched totality. My buddy was like, the funniest thing is he thought he ruined all of our videos, because in it, he started screaming like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I'm telling him, it makes the video.
That's absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Cause it really was. It was just such an extraordinary sight. Totality.
Yeah. We didn't get to see today. We saw about 80% of it here, which was still cool because we were just out in the field, and all of a sudden there's like 100 other people, and we were all talking to each other, strangers, never seen each other before, just sharing this moment and sharing each other's glasses if they didn't have them. And that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was a real coming together moment for this country. It was just awesome to see, and something based around what I love, which was great because the general interest of astronomy elevated. I saw like boosts in my Astronomic Wonders account. Like, you know, I had like 2,000 new followers on that account in the days following the eclipse, and people started asking me questions, and people who would generally have no interest in astronomy, you know, started reeling them in a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, I tell you what, this has been awesome. To Through and After with Mario Romero. All his contact information is down below in the description of this video. Do you have anything to close with, sir? I completely have enjoyed this. I've been looking forward to this since we started talking over a month ago.
So. Yeah. I just want to say thanks for having me on. I'll make myself available if you want to chat again.
Sure.
Yeah, this is really great. And, you know, we can always talk about a lot more, especially when it comes to space and science.
I love it. I look forward to having someone I know that is a astronaut one day.
I hope so. I'm trying.
Yeah. I do know, the former SEAL, or I guess he still is a SEAL, Cassidy.
Yeah,
Chris Cassidy. Yeah, yep. He actually relieved me of my job at SDV Team 2.
Really?
Yeah.
He's the second. There was William Shepard that was first. And then now we have Johnny Kim, who just got accepted and started astronaut training this month.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so hopefully I can be the fourth. Let's see.
Yeah, I love it. SEALS, so Sea, Air, Land, and Space. That's the new acronym.
Awesome. I'm down with it. I'm down with it.
All right, man. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye.